Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, remember, to hear the entire broadcast or more highlights from our recent episodes, you can go to the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
7 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. So you've heard about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or the RFRA law, as it's oftentimes abbreviated, the one that has come from the state of Indiana. This, of course, is a state law that mirrors a federal law that came about 22 years ago. This is Indiana Governor Mike Pence being interviewed just last weekend on ABC television by host George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos leads off with a very important question. Roll it.
So was it a mistake to sign this law?
Absolutely not. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act was signed into federal law by President Bill Clinton more than 20 years ago, and it lays out a framework for ensuring that a very high level of scrutiny is given anytime government action impinges on the religious liberty of any American. After that, some 19 states followed that, adopted that statute, and after last year's Hobby Lobby case, Indiana properly brought the same version that then State Senator Barack Obama voted for in Illinois before our legislature.
Governor Mike Pence of Indiana on national television just last Sunday. Well, we are now told that the governor of Indiana intends for the new law to be fixed, to be amended. But what exactly might that look like? Some are saying that the fix could be worse, far worse than the present day circumstances. Joining us to talk about it, Adele Keim. She is a noted attorney, undergraduate at Princeton University, also a graduate from Notre Dame Law School. She has served in legal capacities both in the countries of Canada and in the U.S., having worked with international religious freedom and social issues for the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. She's now with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She joins us on our guest line now to comment on the Indiana situation. Adele Keim, welcome to the program and to the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Austin.
Before we talk about the religious freedom law, the essence of it, and proposed fixes for that, give us your characterization, if you would, Adele, as to what happened last week. This huge uprising, this earthquake of resistance to religious freedom in the United States of America that erupted in local television media, but then became this worldwide phenomena online on social media. What, in your estimation, really happened to our country last weekend?
You know, those of us who work in the area of religious liberty have been hearing rumblings for a few years now that religious liberty was now under attack, that it was now politically correct in some circles not just to oppose this or that particular religious liberty claim or this or that particular case, but that religious liberty as a concept was under attack. There were people who had formerly been at the fringes of academic life saying things like, when you give religious people accommodations, you're threatening the rule of law. And last week, what we saw was those people who were at the fringes of academia coming out into the popular media and telling the press their view, which is that the Indiana RFRA was imperiled all of our rights. The reality is many of the people who were speaking out in the media and who were behind the social media attacks on the Indiana RFRA don't just oppose Indiana's law. They oppose religious liberty for all.
Adele, just to clarify, it would seem that the hostility, the attacks, are not geared towards all religious groups. They may oppose religious liberty in broad general terms, but it seems like it's very, very distinct, very targeted towards Christians. For example, I don't see the same movements taking aim or really disagreeing much with the religious liberties of the growing Muslim population in North America. I may be missing something, but it seems like this is pretty one-dimensional in that regard. Can you comment on that?
You know, the tragedy of those who have come out opposing the Indiana RFRA is that they're hurting a law that actually protects not just those that they particularly disagree with, that is the traditional historic Christian teaching on marriage, but and those who follow it, but it's also hurting Sikhs and Muslims and Jews, Native American practitioners, people all across this country who really rely on laws like Indiana's RFRA to protect their rights because they belong to religious groups that are just too small to have an effective voice in the democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy is that the victims, if laws like Indiana's get taken down, they've been in force at the federal level for 20 years, over 20 years, in about 20 different states, including bastions of conservatism like Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
If these laws fall by the wayside, the victims are going to be minority religious groups, and they're going to be people serving the poor. Out of religious motivation, because those are two of the groups that we see taking advantage of these laws most consistently.
Very interesting. Adele Keim, she is an attorney with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit legal defense law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She's a graduate of Princeton University and Notre Dame Law School. She's worked on social and religious liberty causes both in the country of Canada and here in the United States. She's on our guest line commenting on the Indiana Religious Freedom Act, or RFRA law, and possible changes to that law amid the controversy. Help us understand what this Indiana law, as it was signed into law by the governor there, Governor Mike Pence, what does this law really stipulate? There's, a lot of misinformation about this. What is the law really about?
The Indiana's RFRA law is modeled on the federal law that was enacted 22 years ago, broad bipartisan majorities in Congress. In fact, it was unanimously voted on in the House. There were 97 out of 100 votes for it in the Senate. It was signed into law by President Clinton, supported by the ACLU at the time, as well as evangelical Christian groups. The law basically does this. The stated goal was to take religious liberty out of the hands of special interest politics. And they did that by enacting a legal standard and saying, courts, when you're listening to a religious claimant's claim that that big government is burdening their religious practice, if the religious person can show that, then the ball shifts to the government to come in with a compelling interest, a really, really good reason for burdening that person's religious liberty, and show that they have no alternative. They can't go around this religious person. They can't root around it. They've got to go through this person's rights in order to achieve their goal. That's a high standard. It can be tough for the government to reach. But what Congress and President Clinton, the ACLU and evangelical organizations said in the early 90s was, religious freedom is our first freedom. We must protect it. And when the government wants to limit someone's religious freedom, they have to have a really good reason for doing so. That's all the Indiana law did. It established that legal standard. And when you have a legal standard, you don't pick winners or losers. It just says, here's how each claim has to be evaluated. And that's one of the beauties of RFRA. It applies equally to all religious groups, large and small.
That said, this is all to say, it sounds like, Adele, that the Indiana law was indeed truly modeled after federal religious freedom law and was a reaffirmation at the level of the state government in Indiana of what President Bill Clinton and a democratically controlled Congress brought to bear 22 years ago. Is that an accurate assessment?
It's absolutely an accurate assessment. Now, the critics of the law have said, no, Indiana's law is completely different. They've said, quote, it's far broader. They're just wrong. And some of those same critics are people who oppose all religious liberty. They oppose RFRA in all its forms, old and new. The Indiana law had two tweaks to update the language that was adopted in 1992 because courts and lawyers had found some ambiguities in the 1992 law. The first one was they updated it to make it crystal clear that the law applied not just to individuals like you and me, but also to corporations. Well, that should be no surprise to us because that's the same thing that the Supreme Court said about the federal law just last year. It said this federal law means that corporations can bring religious claims. Doesn't mean they'll win them, but it means that they can bring them. So the Indiana law stated that expressly. Why did they have to do that? Because some people had been questioning whether the federal law applied to corporations. Supreme Court settled that question. Indiana didn't want to have the same fight in its state court, so it said, okay, we're going to make it crystal clear. We intend this language to mean exactly the same thing the Supreme Court said it meant. So that was one thing that it did that was updating the language of the federal RFRA. And the second thing it did, there's a division in the courts of appeals about the federal RFRA, whether or not it can apply in suits brought by one private party against another private party when the first guy is invoking federal law as his weapon to use against another private person.
Mm-hmm.
Courts like the Ninth Circuit, the Second Circuit, which are very liberal courts in general, have both said, yes, you can use RFRA as a defense in that situation. If someone's using federal law as a weapon against you, then you can use RFRA, another federal law, as a defense. Because courts have gone different ways on that, Indiana said, hey, we're going to update the language of our RFRA to make it absolutely clear. We want our state law to go on this side of that circuit split and not the other side. So those were two ways that it was updated from the federal law. In my mind, that doesn't make it far broader. That's just updating it for the current context and answering questions so people don't have open questions when they go into court and they know exactly what the law means in Indiana.
Adele Keem, she is an attorney with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. Adele, my understanding is that your concern is that if indeed the governor and the state legislature in Indiana pursue some of their proposed changes or quote unquote fixes for their now currently standing religious freedom law, that could have very, very negative consequences for religious freedom. Tell us about that.
The Indiana RFRA wasn't broken, and it doesn't need to be fixed. The federal RFRA is not broken. It doesn't need to be fixed either. The people who are howling otherwise are people who are, by and large, opposed to religious liberty. They're opposed to it in general. They're opposed to it across the board. And you can see that in their statements if you track their public statements. The Indiana law is fine as is, and it was a great law when it was signed into law last week, and it should stay the same. So we're disappointed that the governor feels that he needs to back down on this, because he doesn't. He's on the right side.
All right. We'll continue with Adele Keem in just a few moments. We'll ask her about where things stand and what they might look like going forward as of today. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We continue momentarily. It's now 21 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. What really is at stake in the midst of the controversy surrounding Indiana and its state law that seeks to safeguard religious freedom? We could probably put the state of Arkansas into that category as well. Adele Keem is an esteemed lawyer. She now works with the Beckett Fund, a nonprofit legal defense law firm in the Washington, D.C. area. She's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Depending on what kind of fix comes about, if any fix comes about at all here, Adele, what's weighing in the balance for the United States of America?
Well, what's weighing in the balance is our first freedom. There's a reason that religious liberty is part of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's because religious believers at the time of the founding stood up to our founders and said, we will not vote or support the ratification of the Constitution unless it is clear that our freedom to exercise our religion, which was the reason that many of the colonists left England and Europe in the first place, our freedom to exercise our religion will not be limited by the federal government. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act recognizes and protects that in the modern era. So what's at stake is nothing less than our first freedom.
What happens if that is further undermined or even goes by the wayside, in your estimation? And I ask recognizing that you've practiced law and lived and worked and been involved in the various functionings of the church in two different countries, at least, in the United States and Canada. What could change for us in the U.S.?
International law scholars that study societies around the world have concluded that societies that respect religious freedom and especially respect the rights of religious minorities are more prosperous, more stable, have greater social peace than societies that violate the rights of the religious minorities among them. It's not easy to see why. A government that thinks it has the right to interfere in people's relationship with their God is a government that will interfere in every other aspect of the people's freedom. The United States loses its broad-based consensus that protecting religious freedom is a highest order good, then we are opening ourselves up to the kind of unrest, the kind of conflict, and the kind of tragedies that we see around the world when we look at societies that repress religious believers.
Final question for you, Adele Keim. Without naming the authors and the writers in the publication, there is nonetheless a very interesting scholarly article making its way around, wherein some law school professors and even deans of law schools are weighing in, under condition of anonymity, weighing in on this controversy surrounding the Indiana Religious Freedom Act. They're saying many of the same things that you're saying publicly, yet the article also suggests that the quote-unquote constituency of support for religious freedom in America simply isn't present any longer. That is to say, the article suggests that the number of Americans, even Christian Americans, who understands what is at stake and is actively engaged sufficiently with their elected leaders to let their voice be heard, they're just not there. And the writing is on the wall here. What are your thoughts on that? Is there a constituency still in America that cares about this?
My job every day is to represent religious believers in their claims against the government. And I have the honor of representing people, men and women, who have put everything on the line for their beliefs. They don't all believe the same thing about God. They do believe the same thing about human beings, which is that we have an inalienable conscience and that it's on us, it's our responsibility to do what our conscience requires of us, to obey a higher law while living in society with others. I see those faces every day, and I have no doubt that there is still a constituency for religious freedom in this country. And I hope your listeners will be part of that constituency and will stand up around the dinner table, will stand up in their schools, will stand up at their jobs, will stand up before their elected officials and say, we do not want to be part of a society that thinks that it can tell people what their relationship with God should look like. And we may not agree with each other about God, but we will stand up and defend each other's rights to follow God as we understand him.
Sobering words from Adele Keim with the Beckett Fund. Adele, thanks very much for being here, and thank you for what you do. 26 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. I'm glad you're with us. Well, thanks again for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. Remember, for more information about this, visit the Austin Hill in the Morning program page on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com.